cancer diagnosis at the age of 32, my mom and I talked a lot about the shock of that diagnosis, given several doctors told us you're too young to have endometrial cancer. After much discussion, we began to feel driven to inform and help educate other young women about what symptoms they should be concerned.
Having both been teachers, it seemed natural for us to look for a way to share Alex's cancer journey in order to help other young women avoid such a shocking diagnosis or possibly navigate a similar path. A podcast seemed the best way to get the word out, and that's how Down There Aware was born.
4 years later, our mother-daughter duo has gone from educating and informing to advocacy and action, with a fresh and sometimes very interesting and somewhat humorous multi-generational perspective.
We look forward to sharing with you season 4 as we advocate, take action, and make it a priority to always be
Down There Aware.
Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. We're so glad you're here today. And we hope you had an enjoyable Easter weekend that we're just coming off of. We actually haven't celebrated Easter yet, but you will have already been through that. It's amazing how time travel happens with these podcasts.
Or not.
Or not. So today we were thinking about what we talked about last week and how all of these, you know, examples of news stories that women had misdiagnosis or delayed diagnosis, they weren't listened to. And so mom did a little bit of research into what does that actually mean, not just for the patient. We know what it means for the patient. We know, you know, delayed diagnosis can mean you're diagnosed at a later stage, you are further progressed, and so your treatment is different, your prognosis is different. But in terms of healthcare costs, hospitals, what does that mean, and what does it cost?
Yeah, and so the first article I read, which really kind of drew me in and made me want to do more research, is about specifically endometriosis diagnostic delays. I guess in order to have data that's understandable, there has to be kind of a focus. They can't just say all delayed diagnoses. And so this is specific to endometriosis diagnosis. And it talks about, and this is the cost to the healthcare system and to the patient. It talks about how the symptoms of endometriosis are nonspecific, and they overlap with other gynecologic and gastrointestinal diseases.
Right.
And you know, that makes a lot of sense. We've kind of talked about that. We talked about just last week that you as a patient may not feel like you have the potential to have cancer or some other horrific disease because you have bloating and diarrhea and those things, because oftentimes people have those and don't have a dreaded disease. And, you know, so it's a catch-22. When do you stop and say, wait a minute, this is happening, it's happening too much, you know? And when you bring it to your doctor, when does the doctor go, okay? And so I think that's a lot of the problem with a delayed diagnosis. The patient doesn't know when to recognize it as more than simply what it is. And the doctor doesn't know.
Yeah, well, and I think also, I mean, in my personal experience, they wanted to rule out all of the easy things first. And they wanted to rule out, I mean, so many things cause bloating and so many things cause, you know, all of the cramps and the all of those kinds of symptoms. And so many of the things that cause those are things that you can take Imodium for,
or you can change your diet,
or because it might be that you're glucose intolerant or lactose intolerant or whatever. And so they kind of start with those things. Meanwhile, cancer can be growing, or
exactly,
you know, other things can be happening.
And that's what this talks about as well. I'm going to read, I don't like to just read verbatim, but there's so many stats in it that, I need to read. First, it says the purpose of the study was to examine the economic impact of diagnostic delays on pre-diagnosis healthcare utilization and costs among patients with endometriosis. And the more I read, it became clear to me that when there is a delay in diagnosis, that period of time, the patient is spending a lot of money mm-hmm. to try to see what's going on. And the healthcare system is going through a lot of testing, which costs a lot of money as well.
Right.
So that's what they mean by the pre-diagnosis cost. I was kind of blown away and really encouraged by the fact that this study ran from January 2004 to July 2016. So that's longer than 12 and a half months. I mean, years.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's much longer than 12 and a half years. Well, and also just keep in mind, if you are unaware, and I looked it up to be specific because I knew it was a long time. On average, women in the United States will suffer from endometriosis for 10 years before they receive a proper diagnosis.
Well, and that's in keeping with a couple of things I've been reading.
So it's really cool that the study covered that time,
right,
because that is on average. So that's great.
Yeah. The results of the study are this. The total number of patients included in the study, 11,793.
I would say that's a pretty decent sample size.
Yes, I think that's an awesome sample size. And that's something that's not going to negate the results by them saying, oh, it's not a big enough sample size. What they did was classify these almost 12,000 women into those who had a short time for diagnosis, an intermediate and long delay. So a short delay, intermediate delay, long delay. The short delay showed that 37.7% of that nearly 12,000, those women had a short delay. The intermediate delay, 27%. Mm-hmm. The long delay, 35.3.
So it's about a third each.
Exactly. Close to it.
Yeah.
Patients with intermediate and long diagnostic delays had consistently more all-cause and endometriosis related emergency visits and inpatient hospitalizations in their pre-diagnosis period than the patients with the short delays. The cost involved pre-diagnosis, all-cause healthcare costs were significantly higher among patients with longer diagnostic delays, averaging $21,489 for the short, $30,030 for the intermediate, and $34,460 for the long delay. So about, what, $13,000 more between short and long delay. So again, that's what this study's about, is the cost that's involved. Mm-hmm. You have to take that into consideration. Certainly that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is the health of the women, but
it might not be the most important thing morally to us, but if you're talking to an insurance company and they're looking at their numbers, that's what they're going to see,
right,
is the bottom line.
There were two peer-reviewed papers that were included in these statistics. One of them stated or documented that an average diagnostic delay of 6.7 years among patients with endometriosis was mainly due to delays in a referral from a primary care to a specialist. 6.7 years.
And how often have we seen that, and does that mean the delay is your primary care won't refer you or that they have referred you and you can't get in to see a specialist.
Well, it doesn't specify that, although it does talk about how many primary care doctors don't have the education specific to, I mean, they're primary care doctors.
Right.
And I will say this, my primary care doctor and his PA, anything that goes on with me that gives them pause to stop and wonder, they send me to a specialist. And there are times it kind of annoys me because I just want to get fixed. But I mean, the annoyance is for a split second because I'm so appreciative that they are willing to say, I don't know enough about this, but I'm going to send you to somebody who does.
Yeah. Mom and I see the same primary care, and it's the same for me. Now, I have always just assumed it's because my chart is a mile thick and he's like, I'm not touching that. Not touching that. You need to go see a specialist. You have enough weirdness. I mean, I literally just had my annual physical a couple weeks ago. And he was like, your back surgery was the only surgery you had last year, right? And I was like, dang it, you have to ask that question with me. Like, yeah. But anyway, yeah, they are really quick to send us to a specialist. And they don't have the ego,
right?
Where some doctors might be like, oh, I can figure this out. I can do the research. I can do this. They're able to accept that I went into primary care. I went into family medicine.
For a reason.
For a reason. Yeah. And they're good at it. And people need that service. Mm-hmm. But I'm not an expert on bleed. I mean, he was even the person who sent me to a bleeding gynecologic specialist.
Yeah. I mean, he knew who to send you to.
Right, exactly. And he is so, you know, well connected in his network of doctors. But he doesn't say, I'm an expert on this, or, oh, you should do this. I read one paper one time 10 years ago. Right. So I think keeping the ego in check, and I think it's hard because being a doctor attracts a certain kind of person. It attracts an intelligent person. It attracts a confident person. And sometimes those can go a little overboard and they can build quite a large ego.
Yeah. And another side of that, my primary care doc in Orlando or the Orlando area, he is the one who diagnosed me with HCM and sent me to a cardiologist. He knew enough about it. Of course, he was probably in his 50s. He'd been a naval doctor, had a lot of experience, and sent me to a cardiologist. But he, in going over my testing results and talking to me about family history, he said, this is what I believe you have, and sent me to a cardiologist. And we talked a little bit, touched on it last week. When you had your brain issues and we didn't know what was going on, a pediatrician found your papilledema and sent you directly to the emergency room.
Right. And I think that's the key point of those stories is that, yes, your doctor thought that was your diagnosis and then immediately sent you to a specialist.
Right.
And then my doctor thought it was an emergent condition and she didn't know. What? I guess it was the guy
who you saw Saturday.
Yeah, I saw a doctor every day that week. So, but he looked at my eyes and didn't see, you know, what he was supposed to. And I don't know that he identified what it was, but he identified that the symptom I was having.
He identified the papilledema.
Right.
He didn't know the cause,
but he knew that it was emergent, that it was serious. You need to, you know, get this looked at.
Yeah.
And he called ahead to the emergency room. So they were expecting us. I don't remember waiting.
We did not wait at all.
Literally walked in, said, you know, this is my name. And they pushed us right to the room and I immediately had a spinal tap.
Yes.
It was like they were prepared for us and they knew what to do. So specialists are important, but also primary care doctors who know their patients because they see them frequently. That's important too. I think with my primary care, he knows me well enough to know that if I complain about an issue, it's an issue. I'm not going to complain about everything here and there because I've gone through so much. And so he knows that and he knows me and he can advocate for me.
Right. And we've said this a million times. We are not dissing doctors. That's not our That's not our purpose. We have friends and family members who are doctors and who hold other positions in the medical community. But I'm a career teacher, and every teacher is not a good teacher. Every teacher doesn't do his or her job. Every teacher doesn't do enough continuing education to stay current with what's happening. And as a teacher, I can admit that in my field that exists. So I hope that doctors, and I believe they do, realize that as well. And so we're not dissing all doctors by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Also, in reading about this particular concern about delayed diagnosis, this paper says that, well, actually, it's citing another peer-reviewed paper that reported that this Solomon, the writer of this paper, reported an average diagnostic delay of 4.4 years with 89% of diagnoses made by OB-GYNs. 89%.
And, well, and that's interesting. Are women not seeing an OB-GYN?
Well, they have to be. Most, in many insurances, you have to be referred. Now, some you don't. We don't.
Yeah.
But many you do. So it goes back to the referral from primary care. This goes on to say several reasons for endometriosis diagnostic delays have been identified, including both patient-centered causes such as embarrassment, stigmatization, tolerance, or uncertainty of normal versus abnormal symptoms. Mm-hmm. And the physician-centered causes, such as normalization of patient symptoms and reliance on inadequate diagnostic methods.
Well, and I think before the inadequate diagnostic methods, read that one more time.
A normalization of patient symptoms.
Yeah. I mean, again, not all doctors, but I think it is pretty normalized of, oh, women get cramps at their period. Oh, you're going to feel bloating. You're going to feel tired. You're going to have X, Y, Z. And it reaches far beyond that when it's constant or you have to take days off of work or school because you cannot get out of bed or, you know, it impacts your life. And just to say, oh, that's not that big of a deal. I have a friend who right now has she has a mass in her uterus. It's been biopsied. It is not cancerous. I'm not sure that it's endometriosis tissue. And they know they want to remove it, but because she wants to try and save her uterus and not just have a hysterectomy, she can't have surgery until June. And she's known about this for almost a year. And they just can't get her in any sooner.
But you said it really impacts her mobility.
And even just the other day we were hanging out and she said, I can actually feel it now. You know, like it used to be like I knew it was there and I would have symptoms. But it's like, no, I can like press on my stomach and feel it now.
So it's great that they biopsied and they know it's not cancerous, but it's really impacting her life.
Right. Right. And so even, you know, this study is just about the delay in diagnosis. What about the delay in treatment?
Yeah. Yeah. This goes on to say clinical guidelines do not provide a consistent approach to the diagnosis and management of endometriosis with little attention given to the presence of comorbidities, which may contribute to diagnostic delays. And that makes perfect sense because the doctor, like you said, is going to look at the lesser condition,
right,
and say, oh, let's check this out to rule those out.
And it's that whole doctor saying where they say, when you hear hoofbeats, don't automatically assume it's a zebra.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it could be, but the percentage of times that will happen, it's probably pretty slim. But as a human,
if you're the patient,
yeah, you also have to take into consideration, like, okay, I've gone through this. And I think something that is also frustrating is like when you're a self-aware patient you probably haven't gone to your doctor about this issue until it's gotten to a point where it's affecting your life and you're unable to do certain things. But at that point, I feel like the doctor brings it back to that time where you've already been mitigating, you know, symptoms and things when it was lesser before it grew, and they kind of backtrack a little. And I saw that when I was having GI issues and got sent to a specialist, and he just said, well, if you think you're going to have diarrhea in the morning, you should take Imodium at night. And I was like, all right, so cool. I just saw a specialist to tell me to take over-the-counter medication if I feel like something's going to happen when it's never predictable. Like, what is going on here? Anyway, and so I think that sometimes they do I don't want to say easier, but the less severe kind of treatment.
I think you said lazy last week.
I did say lazy last week, didn't I? And again, I'm not trying to bash people, but I do think that there's a sense of laziness or this isn't worth my time. I have people who have horrific conditions that I need to deal with.
But, you know, so much responsibility also lies with the patient. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying all that, it came to mind, my son, Alex's brother, fell several months ago and got a pretty big gash in his shin area. And it just never has been right. And he had some real issues a few weeks ago, and he went to the walk-in clinic and they sent him to the ER. So I'm talking to him after it's all over. And I said, did you explain to the ER doc that you fell, you were in the canal, which is nasty and full of bacteria and all kind of growing mm-hmm. things. And did you go through? And he said, Mom, they don't want to hear all that. And like, well, I thought, you know, you don't have a clue.
Yeah.
That the doctor can't do his or her job if you don't. I always say, I want your file folder to be as full as mine. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you everything. And I don't feel like that's overkill. I feel like sometimes it can ring a bell in that doctor's mind and go, oh, so that happened. Mm-hmm. Then it could be, you know. So much of it lies with the patient as well. Mm-hmm. The other article I read is about diagnosis delays as well, but it's from a law firm and it's from a legal perspective, which, you know, I never really thought about.
Yeah.
I do think we're a liturgical society and
litigious.
Yeah, we just got through Easter. We just got through Easter. I'm thinking liturgical.
Litigious.
We're in a litigious society. And sometimes that's annoying because people sue McDonald's because they got hot coffee on them and a lot of other horribly stupid things. But it was eye-opening and interesting to me to read about this legal perspective. Well, Sadie has joined us because she's interested in the law.
Ooh.
And she just
or
yawned.
It's boring.
The other article I read, which was very interesting, is from the perspective of a law firm, delayed diagnoses. Mm. And I was interested. Actually, as I was Googling delayed diagnoses, because we talked about that last week, and, you know, I looked at the healthcare and the cost, this popped up and I thought, I've never thought of it in those terms. Yeah. So let's check that out. So this specifies the same things really we've talked about with the healthcare cost is there's a responsibility with the doctor and there's a responsibility with the patient. Mm-hmm. And so I was happy to see that it's not all malpractice, yeah. You know. It discusses, let me see, delayed diagnosis of cancer can lead to devastating consequences. Many patients miss a critical time window during which cancer treatment may have been the most effective because of these delays. And we talked a little bit about that last week. As a result, the time left untreated may allow the cancer to grow and spread to other parts of the body, making treatment even more difficult. Mm-hmm. In some cases, delayed diagnosis leads to the inability to cure the patient's cancer, resulting in patient death.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just really puts a light on the overwhelming responsibility of both parties, because they want to work. You want them to work as a team so that it doesn't end in death. It talks about the delayed diagnosis in many patients happens because whatever's going on with them doesn't have clear signs until the later stages. And we know with my sister who died with ovarian cancer, she had the bloating, the dull backache, you know, the very general signs that we've seen.
Well, and her abdomen looked like she was pregnant and she was in her 60s.
Right.
So,
well, she was 59.
50s.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, a lot of times you don't get it till it's too late to do anything about it. And so there needs to be something that can change that. They also say one of the reasons is the failure of doctors to identify more subtle early symptoms of the condition. Sometimes delayed diagnosis is unavoidable due to the lack of observable symptoms. And I'm glad that that was part of this, because sometimes no matter what the doctor does, no matter what the patient does, it's nothing's going to work. And sometimes, and this is something that wasn't in the other articles, there are false negative results.
Yep.
And so that the doctor relies on those results, and so does the patient. This is the most important thing, I think, about this article, and it specifies some signs of a delayed diagnosis. So I'm just going to read those. There are four of them, because I think this is what we have talked about with putting some text on period products, trying to get the word out through this podcast, just getting the word out. A lack of improvement in patient symptoms. So if you're not getting better, despite an active treatment plan designed for another condition with similar symptoms. Number two, a failure of a medical professional to acknowledge or investigate certain symptoms described by the patient. And we've talked about that. If you're not happy with how your doctor is reacting to what's going on with you, find another doctor.
Well, and I think that is the part that we hear a lot about in the news of, I had these symptoms, I told them these symptoms, they didn't do a scan, they didn't do a biopsy, they didn't do this. And so I think, while yes, we see those stories, I think that's a very narrow field of, you know, not only doctors not doing it, but patients, maybe like that girl who had a 104-pound ovarian tumor removed. She was embarrassed to go to the doctor and talk about this, because they had just blamed everything on her weight and, oh, you're just overweight, we're not going to do any scans or anything.
I'm sure she got tired of hearing that.
Absolutely. And so it was that combination of, she didn't want to go there, that patient responsibility, and the doctors just kept saying and blaming it on something that was completely unrelated.
Right. Number three, failure of a medical professional to order appropriate testing for symptoms which may indicate certain types of cancer. Again, relying on the doctor and his or her expertise. And fourth, evidence of miscommunication or misunderstanding among several involved medical professionals, such as staff members within a medical facility or between multiple facilities. And this just made me think about my mother, who had the same heart condition Alex and I have, undiagnosed.
Yeah, I was going to say, we think she did.
Yeah.
We're pretty confident she did.
Well, because it's an inherited condition.
Correct. And so one of them had to have it.
And she went into cardiac arrest One day she was in the ER because she was having back pain and thought it was a gallbladder attack. My dad took her to the ER, and while they were filling out the paperwork, she coded and hit the floor. And they ran out and used the paddles to get her heart started again. And that procedure caused her to have a broken back because of the way her body hit the floor when it was shocked. So she was in the hospital being cared for, trying to figure out the heart thing, trying to work on her back issue. And all my sisters and I were there. And this doctor came in and said, you know, it really doesn't look good. She is in renal failure. And we said, what? And he said, you know, she's in renal failure. If we can't get this, you know, fixed, there, she's not going to make it. And we were just in shock. She'd never had any kidney issues. We didn't understand how these things could have caused that. And he seemed to not really understand why this happened. It was like an all of a sudden thing. And this nurse, a male nurse, came to us afterwards. We were in the waiting room, and he said, I'm going to tell you something that I don't want you to tell anybody. I told you, but you need to request a nephrology consult. And we said, okay. I mean, we were desperate to find out what was going on. So a nephrologist came in, checked her over, actually just really took one look at her chart and started saying, take her off this, 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 and this. And he looked at us and he said the combination of the medication she was on was causing her kidneys to fail. And that's a perfect example of this miscommunication among all the professionals. Yep. Because there were so many specialists working on her and they were focusing on one thing that was wrong with her. But the combination of the treatments were killing her. So a perfect example of what this is talks about. Mm-hmm. And again, these four things put the responsibility on the patient as well as the doctor. And I think that's the lesson to be learned, that, you know, it's a team effort. We're all here for the same reason.
It is. And I think that's why we, you know, harp on, we're not just bashing doctors. We're not just bashing healthcare professionals. But we're also not bashing the patients. We're trying to educate and help everyone become their own advocate so that they eliminate one of those issues, right? Like if you're the doctor, you're going to look for things and you're going to do, investigate and all of that. And if you're the patient, you're going to ask questions and find a second opinion and things like that.
And in both cases, what is happening in your particular case can inform the doctor for future patients,
right?
Can inform the patient for future experiences with their own healthcare.
Right.
So that's really why we even do this. We're not experts on anything, really. We just have been through so many experiences from which we've learned that we want to impart what we know to others so that maybe it will help.
Yeah. And, you know, I haven't really spoken to that gynecologist who was the one who ordered the DNC and actually diagnosed me with cancer. But I do hope that he has absorbed from my experience and from, you know, our experience together that he needs to not be so quick to dismiss. And in his defense, he did order the test.
Yes,
he did. And he did cover all of his bases. But his countenance and just how he handled things beforehand of kind of being flippant about,
well,
it's not going to be this. It's not going to be that. It's not going to, like, very, very sure. I hope that he now is speaking to patients in a way of, it's very unlikely that this could be it, but it's not, you know, impossible. We're going to do the test and then we'll see. And then we'll move on from there.
Words are important.
They are. And if that's what I had been told, I think I would have been a little more prepared.
You would have been better
for
prepared
that diagnosis.
As would I.
Yes. So thanks for joining us today. A little more in depth about that delayed diagnosis and how it impacts not only patients, but doctors, and from a cost perspective, as well as a legal perspective, a liturgical perspective, if you will.
I still got Easter on my mind.
So thank you so much. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Down There Aware. Be sure to like and subscribe on our new YouTube channel, as well as on your favorite podcast platform. You can find us at Down There Aware on all social media sites, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you have it, we're there at Down There Aware. You can learn more on our website, www.downthereaware.com, and always get in touch with us, downthereaware@gmail.com. See you next week.